You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Hello, this is Karen Elkins from Science Today Radio, and I'm your host today, and we have two guests. One is Howard Martin. He'll be with us for the first hour. He's with the HeartMath and Global Coherence Initiative. It's a science-based co-create project to unite people in heart-focused care and intention to facilitate a shift of consciousness on the planet. And Steve Ellswick with 999 National Tesla Society Man of the Year. He puts on a Tesla symposium, and he publishes Extraordinary Science and Technology. Howard, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good to be with you, Karen. Good that we were together, like, I think 2010 at the event that we did with Greg Braden and myself in Vancouver, and I certainly enjoyed you up there, and I'm glad to be on your show today.
Thank you. Well, Institute of HeartMath and the Global Coherence Initiative has been I've been a big fan of it for a long time. I think what you're doing is amazing. And you've done and conducted an extensive amount of research on the power of heart intelligence to win energetic connection between all of us, and that in itself is clear. I was watching you on your TED Talk last night just sort of get warmed up for the show, and you said a few things on there that I love what you said. It was when we're talking about communication, but your heart is your hero, and it's the core of your authentic self. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to. I mean, just ways in characterizing heart. You know, a lot of times when I'm doing my live presentations, I try to give people a little experience of what heart is to me. And, you know, it's a lot of things. We certainly know that it's the cardiovascular organ, the most amazing pump that's ever been on planet Earth. We know more about that now, that it's an information processing center in our body. These are all things that we've learned through the heart math science. We also know that there's an emotional connection to heart. We can talk about all these things as we go through our show, but certainly the source of emotions, or at least the reference to the source of emotions that we revere the most, like love and care and compassion, all relate to heart. And then we have a spiritual heart, you know, which goes into the energetics and the energetic connections between all living systems and things like that. But then I do loop it back around, and what I really feel is that it is the core of our authentic self. It is a place inside ourselves where the hero from within is really born. It's that place inside ourselves where we, when we make contact with it, is where we move beyond our mediocrity. It's where we often find the ability to do things that we sometimes just think we can't, and somehow we do. All of that is what we call heart here at HeartMath. And we actually talk about the intelligent heart, and we say we have heart intelligence, and it embodies all those things I just mentioned. But to me, it's the very core of our being. It's who we really are. It's in that deep heart place that we find that self that's the true self that goes beyond that personality and all the stuff that we accumulate over years that we identify as ourselves. And a lot of that's, you know, to me, you know, just false assumptions that we spend a lot of time trying to defend. When we go deep inside ourselves into the heart, we find that authentic self. And that's what I was referring to in that particular talk you saw on, I guess, YouTube.
I did, loved it. And what was interesting to me is the notion of looking at electrical strength, and it was talking about the core of a gathering or the core of a field. And at the inside was the sort of the part that you magnetized to you, that was part that you radiated. So when you think about, when you're thinking about how much emotion, when you're pulling things into you, it's in your heart that you would like. I know when I started, I'm not a teacher, I'm an educator. I'd be honest, the sin was going like ruin him. But I didn't think I could do that, but I did anyway. So I became my son's hero and a few other people's along the way. So I completely understand what you're talking about from stepping into places that you wouldn't normally do. So when we talk then, Howard, about, I imagine that's a battery. And so when you're doing a lot of your research, you're going from the heart to the head to the Coherence Initiative to a bigger field, which is the next.
Okay. One second, if I may. I really apologize to you and to everyone who's listening from wherever you are around the world, but I've got a bad phone line right now. So what I'm going to need to do is to get the number from you again and then call you right back, because I've got a little problem going on with the phone line right now.
All right.
Second, let me find that number and I'll call you. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about some of the field effects and things that you've been talking to me about, and then I'll come right back to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
What got me excited about having Howard on, this is, a lot of you have known, you've listened to Joe's, is the whole idea of the electric universe. And what got me excited was the fact that he can go from the heart to the heart to the head to the whole global field of how we get people interact when there's on the earth, and we all feel it collectively, to when we look at China, the solar flare, when we look at how all the people, what's the field, what's the battery, how do we get, how does this all work, is what got me excited about having Howard, because I don't think it's a claim to here initiative done, what all that is really about. And then I was doing more research. I was looking at the whole idea of the Higgs boson as a particle. It gets mass like all other particles interacting, swimming in a Higgs field. So, as you can imagine, the Higgs particle differs from all other particles we know. It can be thought of as a spot in the Higgs field, which can be gobbled like any other particle, like a drop of water and a water vapor. Even that's like the ancient text of his dream, he'll use these little fields of energies bubble up and come alive. So I think I've got a half back on here. And from there, the whole idea of how feelings feel communicate, and we don't even think of it that way. And communicating, like, after the universe is interacting with us, when we've had somebody like Robert Reed, who does can see is that there is a frequency emanating from the different planets, and he's still having a hard time getting on here. And these fields are something that we are always affected by. I think that's why I didn't think you used as much of astrology, but now I realize that what we're looking at is effects of different frequencies as we dance around a system. And I think the other interesting thing is we are a system, and we have a command of our own body inside, because we have also different planets, what we call our organs and the cells, which we aliven with our every vibration. And again, our field of influence is our conversation with ourselves. So when I look at heart math, how do living organisms create fields? What is a field? So I'm waiting for poor Howard. He's still spinning up there in the ethers. So here's the idea of this: a field can be classified as a scalar, vector, spinner, or tensor field according to the value of each of its points. So why the whole idea of all of these things, like a scalar being, I look at the picture on Wikipedia, it reminds me of an electrical cross where you have a torus field that literally spins, and it goes in our Earth in polar directions. The Earth spins one end and one A and the other way, the way the energy fields work. It's like the polarities of the yin and the yang. And the female, I was looking at Graydon's work the other day with electrical fields and how the DNA creates certain codes, how the very beginning of the Hebrew alphabet, first, which if you look at it, looks like a strand of DNA. If you pile them on top, they look like strands of DNA. Again, it goes back, and on one side is with one side is the left side, one's the right, one's the positive, one's the negative, one's the male, one's the male. So we by our nature are completely electric. Are you there, Howard?
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. I hope you're listening in if you've been trying.
I want you to do me one more quick favor. My phone still sounds choppy with you. Just jiggle the little cord maybe going into your phone. Let's see if that cleans it up at all. I've looked at my phone on my end. I'm still hearing you breaking up, so I'm trying to really tune into you so I can dialogue with you, answer your questions, and have a great show here for everybody that's listening.
I'm totally plugged in and good.
Okay, now I hear you fine.
I said, okay, super.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, what we were talking about is the whole nature of the universe being electric. So a lot of your studying, I think, sort of goes along with that idea. We were talking, what I did is how do living organisms create a field? And I just was saying that they're scalar, vector, and spinner. But for me, until I actually looked some of those up, I didn't quite get them. So maybe you can, when you do your study, what do you find out about how a living organism creates a field?
Well, let me bring it right back around to my expertise, which is the heart. You know, what we know about the heart, this is one of the interesting facts about heart, is that that we discovered in our research, is something that was also known but not really explored, and that's the fact that the heart is an electrical organ. You know, it produces by far the strongest source of what we call bioelectricity in our body, 40 to 60 times stronger than the second most powerful source, which is the brain. So the heart is an electrical organ, and it's, if you think about when we go to a doctor and the doctor takes our ECG, they put electrodes around our chest, right? And they pick up what? An electrical signal, and they look at that signal and they determine something about the health of our heart. But here's where it gets interesting, Karen, is that that electrical signal is very strong. It actually creates an electromagnetic field around us that extends beyond our skin out into space. In my book that I wrote, The Heart Mass Solution, with our founder, Doc Childrey, we reported on a clinic in Kansas, the Menninger Clinic, and they had said that they detected the field 8 to 10 feet outside the body. Our researchers, using magnetometers, which they felt would be more reliable measurement devices, said that they can pick it up easily 3 to 4 feet outside the body. So regardless of distance, what's happening is we are creating an electromagnetic field. Now, that field will change depending upon what we experience emotionally. And let me explain that to you and to the guest. If we are experiencing a negative emotion, like anger, frustration, resentment, judgment, those kind of things, what we see happening is it creates frequencies in that field that are rather chaotic and discordant. The good news is when we make emotional shifts within ourselves and we begin to feel emotions that have been associated with this concept of heart, like love or care or compassion, those kind of feelings, the field becomes very coherent and very ordered. So we're literally modulating this electromagnetic field all the time through what we are experiencing in life and our emotional responses to that. Now, 3 to 4 feet outside the body is not a lot of feet. But when you start thinking about it and take it beyond just a measurement of electromagnetic fields and you go beyond just the Newtonian physics models, and now you take it into quantum physics, which takes off the limitations of time and space, and the heart's field could be tremendous. Throughout the universe, actually, in terms of its connectivity. So to me, what's happening at an electromagnetic level and beyond into other more subtle energy fields is we are connecting to ourselves, to each other, to the earth itself and beyond the earth through the electromagnetic field and other fields associated with heart.
Now, when you talk about that, two ways I relate to that is one is thinking of the Schumann resonance.
Yep.
And the other end is the crystallized structures of all living things. So why don't you explain what the Schumann resonance is? Because I think that would, because that mirrors the heart and the brain.
Well, we have the Earth itself has energetic fields. A part of the Earth is a living system, and they are really protective layers around the Earth. Think of them as sort of energetic nature. One field that everybody's familiar with is the geomagnetic field, and that's the field that is produced by the spinning of the iron core at the center of the Earth, and it's what a compass measures. That's the electromagnetic field, the geomagnetic field produced by the Earth. But there's another field that some people may have heard of, and it's called the ionosphere. The ionosphere operates just above the atmosphere and goes about 110 miles or so up into space. It's the last part of Earth. It's an energetic field that works in consort with the geomagnetic field as a protective layer around our Earth, and it starts again above the atmosphere and goes up into space. Now, there are several levels within that field, within the ionosphere. One of those is where what we call the Schumann resonances are. It's part of the ionosphere, and it's just certain frequencies within that field because the ionosphere is not very dense. It's very plasma-like. It's a very subtle field, a very important one, but it's not as dense or as thick, so to speak, as the geomagnetic field. So the Schumann resonances are one of the frequency bands within the fields produced in the ionosphere. Now, here's what's interesting about that is when we do our research, what we found was that some of the frequencies in the ionosphere, primarily Schumann resonance frequencies, are in exactly the same frequency range as those that we produce in our hearts and our brains. So there's a frequency match between us and the ionosphere that can be measured through looking at the frequencies that we produce and the frequencies that exist in the ionosphere.
You know, it's interesting when I was talking to Walt Thornhill from the Electric Universe model. Basically, likes. I mean, if you think of water, likes attract likes. So I wonder if that's how we get attracted to this field, this planet.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just know that, yeah, you're talking about resonances now, you know, and frequencies.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what we have to look at today, and I agree with some of the things that you were saying to me just very briefly before we went live, and that is we are all energetic beings. We're living in a world now of understanding, you know, energetics a lot more, that we are all, you know, basically energetic forms vibrating at different speeds. And there's an energetic connection between all living things. And science is beginning to unfold that more and more now, to begin to see those connections at that level. So us, plants, nature, the earth itself, beyond the earth, the solar system, the sun, beyond all that, we're all just basically interfacing in different ways at energetic levels. Now, as human beings, we still got a long way to go to understanding these things and sensing them. And that's part of the evolutionary spiral that's happening during the shift. It has to get to a point where it's not mystical, for example. It has to be something that we begin to understand and see from a very practical, grounded sense. And that's where, you know, heart math comes in. I mean, we do a lot of really interesting science, but we've been very grounded in our science. And I think more importantly, we've been very grounded in the tools and techniques that we develop that are taught through our training programs and things to give people the ability to empower themselves to come into the new intelligence and new awareness that will give us a greater understanding of things like the connectivity energetically between all living systems. And to me, that's the real goal. It's interesting new information out there. It can be very, very theoretical. It can be very expansive. It can be very sort of thought-provoking in a way, in a fun way. But then eventually it has to ground itself out into what we can do day-to-day, moment-to-moment, that gives us that greater connection and sensitivity to these things.
That goes back to the whole idea of what you were talking about, coherence. And you have something with HeartMath, which is your M-Wave, where people can actually learn or train themselves to be more coherent. So why don't you explain that?
Yeah, well, let me back it just up a little bit. You know, we know biologically that the heart is an information processing center in our body and that it actually sends commands to the brain and to the rest of the body. What we found is that the heart is essential. I mean, it's a master controller of so many things biologically, and it actually influences every single bodily function, including brain function. Now, as we study this and study these four different ways in which the heart communicates, what we found was is there was a state called, and I'm going to use a medical term now, called psychophysiological coherence. So I just call that coherence. I'm a Southern guy, so I'm going to put it right down to simple.
Thank you.
Call it coherence. So coherence is this highly ordered state when heart-brain-body communications are optimal. When that's occurring, what takes place, Karen, is that all the biological systems in the body begin to synchronize to the rhythmic beating pattern of the heart. That means things like digestion, respiration, brain function, hormonal response, immune system response, all that stuff syncs up. So we're operating in this very, very highly efficient and very healthy physiological state. There's also an emotional component to coherence, because here's where it gets to be kind of interesting, and it puts it in a practical sense of something we can do. When we are experiencing positive emotions, our body goes into that coherent state. If we're loving somebody, that's what happens. If we're appreciating the good things in our life, that's what happens. Conversely, if we're griping and complaining about everything and judging everybody, we're not in a coherent state. So it gets back to very simple 1 + 1 = 2 kind of things and understanding how this works. But in that coherent state, everything is optimal. And the heart's energetic field is broadcasting a very coherent field at that point. Now, it's my belief that in that coherent state, through the coherent energetic fields that we then produce, that's where we begin to access more of our higher intelligence capacity. Things like practical intuition become more available to us. We have greater insights into ourselves, into others. We know how to communicate better. We know how to make decisions better. You know, we still make mistakes. We're human beings. But the percentage or the ratio of times that we're really on and that we do the right thing, we communicate in the right way, all that increases when we are accessing that part of ourselves that's the best part of our intelligence capacity. I'll take it even wider than that. I'll go out of science and practicality for a second and just make a statement just based on my own personal experience and say that when we are in that coherent state, that's when spirit merges with our humanness. And when I use the word spirit, I just mean that higher intelligence part of ourselves that goes beyond the limitations of our normal thought patterns and logic and linear brain processes. That state that really is the higher part of ourselves. I call it spirit, just in general. It could be called universal source, higher self. People have a lot of names for it, and I just will just use the word spirit as a way of expressing it. But in the coherent state, that's when we access spirit. That's when it becomes part of what we are as human beings and becomes a utility that we apply to making life better.
You know how I see that visually, Howard, is, you know, when I've watched you calm people on stage, you know, when you have them breathe right and think of loving things, their brain, their waves are like really static in the beginning, and by the time you've guided them through to peace, all of a sudden the wave is very smooth and calm. And it reminds me of being like in an eddy, right? If you're in a tornado and you're in the fray, I mean, everything is hitting you, but if you're in the still part of the calm, it's when you actually get to receive.
Yeah. Yeah, what you're referring to, I think, Karen, is when I did the demonstration of our heart rhythm coherence technology. And,
You
know, we have two versions of it now. I'll be glad to be able to share that with you. We have the M-Wave technology, and I'll spell that for your listeners, E-M-W-A-V-E. And the reason I spell it is because when we came out with this years ago and I would do a show like yours right in the beginning, I would start getting calls from our salespeople saying, "You do a show today and talk about Amway?" Because of my accent, you know, so they wanted to know if I did an Amway show. So I said, well, I better start spelling this out. So it's E-M-W-A-V-E. And now we took that same technology, and I'll explain to the listeners what this is, but we took that same technology, and then about 3 or 4 months ago, we now have it on mobile devices for people that use iOS. That means, you know, iPads, iPhones, that kind of thing. Now you can have the whole experience on your phone or your tablet. So what it does is the M-Wave technology, or what the tablet version or phone version is called Inner Balance Trainer. So look that up, and you have to have a sensor that you plug into your phone to access it. You can get the app for free, and then you get a sensor from us that plugs into your device, and you can see what's taking place. So what you have with an M-Wave or Inner Balance Trainer is you see those heart rhythms happening in real time, and you can see that right on the screen. And that's what you're talking about. When I do my live presentations, I show that from the stage. And so then, as you begin to practice different techniques, and people can use whatever techniques work for them, we're very neutral about that at HeartMath. We have a whole system of tools and techniques that we've developed that are taught through our training programs. But people have their own versions of that, their meditations, their prayers, their affirmations, their intentions, all the things they do. And as you do these things, you can begin to see the heart rhythms changing in real time. Now, as you mentioned, when somebody comes up, let's say, on stage, they're a little nervous, you know, they're in front of a whole bunch of people, and you can see their heart rhythms are very jagged and disordered. And what the M-Wave technology, the Inner Balance Trainer, shows is a coherence score, and the coherence score would be low in that case. So then what I do is I just try to get people to go to that place inside themselves, into their heart, and to access that authentic self and to find a place of appreciation or care in there where they can feel it. And when they do, what you see happening in real time is you see those heart rhythms become very smooth and ordered. You see the coherence score start going up and up and up. It goes into high coherence. And all that's happening because people are changing their emotional state. And so that's the beauty of it, is that if we're going to access feels and understand the big picture on these things and begin to really see how things work energetically throughout the entire universe, it has to start with us to learn to make the emotional shifts. Now, I have compassion and understanding for how hard that is, especially in these times. In these times, we're going through a huge shift. We've got a lot of influences in the world today that are forcing the evolutionary imperative to unfold at a very high speed. And that can be a rocky road many times. So if you're listening to us now, to Karen and I, and you're having some times that are a little harder, or you're feeling, you know, some strong energies, or feeling an awkwardness in yourself, know that you're not alone. Know that it's going on in every living thing. But with the power of the heart, we have the ability to make some changes inside ourselves. And as we do, we begin to interface more with the positive aspects of this shift, the energetics of that are facilitating the change. We learn to resonate more with that. So you're right on it, Karen. You're right on it about it's learning to resonate with certain frequencies and learning to change our own internal system so we do resonate with those and come into a better, easier, gentler process through the shift.
And I actually get it. The more you do that, the more you attract into your life. I think that's also key to understand.
I'm sorry, it was a little breakup on the phone then, so if you could ask me again, I'll be glad to answer that.
But again, people need to know that once they've done those themselves, they will attract more of that type. Did you hear that?
Yeah. No, it's a little breakup again. I heard the first part, but not the second.
It's okay. Here's the question, Howard. The other thing you're doing, that you've taken it not just from the personal, but with the Global Coherence Initiative, you're taking it to global.
Got
so
that.
You have,
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so why don't we make that transition there? So we'll step it up to the bigger picture.
Okay, great. Okay, so here's the deal. We've done a lot here at HeartMath. We've been around for 22 years now, so we've done a lot of work in many, many different areas. And about 5 years ago, we decided, you know, let's take a look at things from a different view. We started HeartMath because we were on a spiritual mission, and we've been able to be very successful in the mainstream society with the things that we've done. But we wanted to go back and say, okay, we always believed that change would occur, in systemic change in people and in various, you know, systems that govern the planet's, you know, functions and all that. That all those changes would occur through a change in consciousness itself. And so we needed to now focus more on the field itself of consciousness and to have people work together to create changes in those fields so that it could filter down into the things that, that influence our day-to-day lives. So we created a separate part of HeartMath that's called the Global Coherence Initiative. And we'll give out a website you can look at before the show's over, but Global Coherence Initiative. And so what this is we formed a membership organization. It's a membership that you don't have to pay for. It's free, but you can join. And there's about 54,000 members now. They come from about 100 countries all around the world. And we're bringing people together in heart-focused care and intention to use the power of our hearts to influence the fields in a way that can have a positive effect on society. Now, as you know, and as many of the listeners know, there are thousands of groups that are bringing people together, and they're using various forms of personal growth and spiritual practices to help make a difference in the world. So, in fact, they are working what? Energetically, right? Well, I mean, what's a synchronized meditation? It's an energetic output. So people are doing this already. We didn't want to try to be the big deal about this or be the leader of anything. We just wanted to do our part. So it's a very unambitious project for us that we allow things to be drawn to us rather than us trying to push it out there. But because it's HeartMath, we brought science to the party. And so what our researchers have done is they've developed very sensitive technology that can measure subtle changes in the Earth's geomagnetic and ionospheric fields. And they call these global coherence monitoring sites. And so this technology can allow us to begin to observe changes occurring in these fields. So what they're doing is they're over time putting about 12 to 14 of these monitoring sites around the world, strategically located around the world, so they can get a complete view of the Earth's energetic fields. From that view, they can study many things. And what they're really studying is the interactions taking place between the Earth's energetic fields and human beings. And so today, we have four working sensor sites in place. We have one in Northern California. We have one in Northern Canada. We have one in the United Kingdom. We have one in Saudi Arabia. We'll have one going very soon into New Zealand, and another very shortly after that will be placed in South Africa. And so as we speak, as we're on this show right now, there's data coming back to the Institute of HeartMath Research Labs, and they're looking at changes occurring in these fields. Now, where this goes into the next level of scientific inquiry, well, many scientific levels of inquiry, is that we have a hypothesis that's behind all of this. The hypothesis is that we, the human beings, the 7 billion people on the planet, through the energetic output that we put out of our system constantly through the heart, that we are affecting those fields. That's the hypothesis, is that mass human emotion, whether positive or negative, can have a measurable influence on the Earth's energetic fields. Here's why that's important. Science knows very well now that these fields are affecting us. It's not just heart mass science. A lot of science is showing the effects of the Earth's energetic fields on human beings. And a lot of things in terms of mass human behavior, you know, start and ending of wars, changes in the stock market, hospital admissions, traffic accidents, all kinds of things have been linked to changes in these fields. Also, changes in the fields that occur naturally through solar cycles have been linked now to expansive eras of creativity, for example. So there's a good side to this. The fields aren't out to get us. There's a very positive, uplifting side to this. But it's a known fact now that the Earth's energetic fields are affecting human health and behavior. So if that's true, and we are affecting the fields, then there's a responsibility and an opportunity that we have to make changes in these fields through the energetic output that we put out of ourselves into the energetic field environment and then have that feed back to us like a feedback mechanism through the Earth's geomagnetic and ionospheric fields. And so the sensor sites are monitoring that.
Okay. When one itself is a living and alive being, but when we look at the structure of it, it definitely is.
It really is. So we have to look at the Earth as a living system. It's a being, in a sense. You know?
Yeah, and not in a sense, in a sense. And it's structured very much like we are, so we are still crystallized, like our bones are crystallized to the core, so is the Earth.
That's exactly right.
We are communicating.
Exactly.
We just don't think of it that way.
Now, another thing you may know more about than I do in terms of overall because of the studies that you've been doing, but one of the natural occurring things that affects these fields is changes in the solar activity. And we are in a very heightened state of solar activity right now, lots of solar flares and things that are impacting the field. And, boy, that is changing the energetic environment in people. You can feel it and you can sense it.
I was going to get you in touch with Walt Thornhill and see if you guys could connect because I think he's the utmost expert in the energetic, that the sun itself is an energetic being, that electric being, and it too is pulsing things out. And whether it's positive or negative, who knows? I mean, but it seems like you're saying there's a renaissance that can happen when there's quote, light or more charge or more power. So if I think of how a battery works or how a person works, the more connected, the more they're lit up, the more they're charged, again, it could be great as long as you don't get quote-unquote right.
What I've learned about it is that there's still this personal responsibility thing in there. Like, okay, so the sun's doing what it does. It's an energetic form itself, and it's putting a lot of energy out that's impacting the Earth. The Earth's energetic fields, which then in turn have an influence on us. What that influence becomes is in my hands.
Right.
A solar storm can make me irritable, and edgy and more emotional, or it can make me have just more energy to put out more love and care. And that ends up being my responsibility.
Okay.
And so I can't just blame anything on the fields. I like to say, I'm sorry I'm having a tough day today because of a solar flare. But I can't do that, even though that's true. So I can tell my wife, look, don't mess with me right now. There's a solar flare going on, But
maybe true. Run.
It's probably true. Yeah. Well, there is an influence, and it can definitely be influential on those negative emotions. That's a reality. That's truth. And there's a lot of energy that's coming from the sun right now, and that extra solar activity is impacting things, and it can make people naturally feel a little bit more edgy. What that means to me is I've got to do a little more inner work to find the resonance with that energetic output from the sun that facilitates my growth and well-being as opposed to, taking it the other way.
That a field and it has a positive and a negative polarity, I can choose what polarity to take it out. It's basically what you're saying to me.
That's right.
I can take responsibility for what polarity they choose to or what side I'm going to be on, whether I'm going to be positively charged or negatively charged.
Yeah, and that's with, it's true. That's an absolute. And I'll go back to saying I do have compassion about these things because a lot of times it's just hard. There are all these influences, and they can make us feel a little rocky, a little shaky inside. And we make our best efforts to balance that out and to find a place to this inside that feels better, and sometimes we can't. And sometimes it's just not easy. And so it's okay to feel that way. I mean, and one of the things in my talks now, Sharon, is I go out live and do events, it's like near the end I find myself, and it wasn't even planned, but I find myself just saying that one of the things that I wish people would do is please have more compassion for yourself. Because times are not easy.
Something also with the Global Coherence Initiative where you send out, if people sign up for it and it's free, when the moon gets full, we send out a group to do a mass prayer.
Yeah, we do what's called a care focus. And there's a place on the site, which I know you've seen, but you go into the care focus room and you get in there. If you become a member, you get access to that. And you go into the care focus room, and what you see is this: there's a globe on the computer screen, beautiful globe of the Earth, and there's a technology built into it that shows where you are in the world when you log in, and it doesn't give you your home not your home location, but it's what you call your internet provider address, your IP address. And so what you see is you see these little gold markers all around the world of people who are in the care focus room at that time when you are. And then you can leave comments, and people leave these comments, and I like to read the comments because what you see is you see the comments are so heartful for starters, and they're also very similar. You can have somebody saying something in Brazil that's saying something very similar to someone that's in Iceland or Greece or Thailand or something, you know, and that's cool because you start getting this sense of interconnectivity. We can talk about the science part of it, and that's all true. You know, that's interesting that the fields connect to one another and all that. But at the same time, when you start seeing the people in their comments, it even grounds it more. It takes it into,
right.
Wow, look at this. You know, these people, we're all beginning to feel similar things. We all have similar values. We have hopes and dreams that are similar. All that stuff becomes alive when we begin to see it, when people write these comments. So it grounds out this understanding that we are connected, and we start seeing it more viscerally. I'm going to the Care Focus Room right now just to see there. It's called the Global Care Room on the site. And
mm-hmm.
right now there's not a lot of people there. There's only 15 people in there at the moment. Sometimes there's hundreds in there. And the globe will come up in a second, and I can see where they are around the world. So what we do once a month at least around the full moon, and I was just working with Deborah Rosman on the Care Focus for this month, just not long before we got on the show. But we put out a message, and we try to focus on something that we feel is important for the world. We could focus on something every day. We know that. So we don't want to overdo it, but we focus on various things that are happening in the world. And what we say is, you know, we want to suggest that you use your heart focus, care, and intention, and you send it towards helping to ease something, you know, that needs a little help in the world. And so we record these things, and you can listen to the recording of it, and you get led through it, you know, that kind of thing. There's music built into it if you want to have music while you do it, and all that's there. And we put these care focuses out and around the full moon. And the one we're working on now is to try to ease up on some of the polarities and separations that are happening in the world. We see it, you know, in conflicts that we see between, you know, various religions and political systems and all that sort of thing, and the judgments that people have with each other and all that. And that's a separation that comes up. And we think we can use our heart focus, care, and intention to ease that up some, because we also see, as exemplified by the Global Coherence Initiative itself, people coming together, not separating, from all around the world with different belief systems, different cultures, different spiritual practices. All that can be different, but the commonality that's there is a care to make this world a better place.
Everybody gets up and wants to have kids or whatever. Wouldn't you all want to get up and have the same thing? I think sometimes the way I even look at some of our politics going on today here in the States is it's to divide and conquer, which I think is kind of crazy, when we all basically have basic needs that we need to take care of. When you're talking about the Schumann resonance and the different fields and the ionosphere, I know that what I was thinking of, I know Bill Tiller has done some work, done some research with you guys. And
yeah, sure.
He also talks about the different layers of our own fields, which sounded to me very similar to how you were talking about the different layers of our own, you know, the Earth to the ionospheres to the Schumann resonance to that. Our bodies are basically the same. Am I, from what the research you've done, is that not true?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we're producing multiple fields in the body. I think this is part of the new science that's exciting, is we're beginning to discover how electrical and how, you know, energetic we really are. And Bill Tiller was on our scientific advisory board for years, and he's one of the primary scientists that understands the, you know, he uses water as a way of demonstrating energetic field effects, which is pretty interesting, you know, that what he does. But I'm going to find something else that I'm going to share with you and the listeners right now that I just have gotten information on recently that I just have started putting into my own PowerPoint presentations that I'll be going back out on the road with this year. And it's an energetic effect that's been done now in, I think, over 70 labs. And basically what happens is you take a sample of DNA and you place it, in a vial, and you expose it to very, very low levels of specific electromagnetic energy. And that electromagnetic energy changes the conformation of the DNA in the field. Okay, that's easy enough. But then where it gets really wild is they take that DNA sample, they place it next to, I think it's three or four different vials of nothing but water. It doesn't touch. It just sits there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they see about 90% of the same pattern begin to emerge in the samples of the water that was in the samples of the DNA. And
that
it's not
kind of
touching.
Makes sense. No, but that's, again, resonance, right?
It's resonance. It's showing that there's subtle
fields.
Energetic fields affecting everything. It's wild that they're doing that. We've done it here at HeartMath, but what's interesting is how many times it's been replicated.
Well, it makes sense to me.
I think 70 labs have gotten the same kind of results. So it's amazing what's going on there with that.
Well, are you familiar with Gerald Pollack's work in water?
No.
Or Dr. Wei Min Ho, it's really interesting to me because water seems to be the way the signature is carried. So, you know, if you look at even a lot of the ancient texts, they'll tell you the field is water. So how does the water get, you know, how do we get affected through the field is electrical thing through, I'll call it ether. And if you look at how ether used to be spelled, which is A-E-T-H-E-R versus water, they're very similar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I think water is a universal, you know, something universal to the planet as well, right? And even we are made up of, what's the percentage? We were like 90% water or something? You know?
It's like 74 or something like that.
74, okay.
Water.
Well,
yeah, something like that. It
yeah.
varies,
so
whatever you read
water
out.
Water beings in a sense. So maybe a lot of that information is transferring through the water properties that exist exist here on Earth and in ourselves as human beings.
Interesting.
But the energetic transfer is what I think that other thing demonstrates, is you have energetic transfer occurring that's creating changes and pattern changes in other objects, so to speak, with no physical contact. And how does that occur? It has to be an energetic radiation of some kind, right, that makes that happen. So if that's at very subtle levels. If you take that to the macro now, look at us, as sophisticated as a human being is and all the different energies we're putting out, and then the Earth itself, with the myriad of things that exist on this planet. And then you place the planet in the context of the solar system and the sun and all that, and it goes on and on and on. It gets mind-boggling in terms of that.
Think about it, how everything is a crystalline structure, right? And look at Dr. Zimoto's work. And when we speak, we create different geometries in our body. Our body's a geometry in itself. And so when you look at the transfer of energy and sacred geometry and all of these things, it all makes perfectly good sense. It all dovetails together.
It does. It starts to make sense. And I think connecting the dots is where we are now. I mean, there's some interesting science that's hitting on sort of the edges of things, you know, sort of forcing the envelope a little bit. And I think where we are right now is we are at a place where we're coming into the new intelligence now to begin to allow us to look into the next dimension of understanding. The problem is a lot of the things that are trying to be measured are really operating in a dimension that's just above the standard baseline dimension of consciousness that operates on our planet. So the difficulty, from a simplistic point of view, the way I see it, is that we are trying to measure things occurring in another dimension with the equipment from this dimension. So we're operating a third-dimensional baseline here on planet Earth, and we're looking into the fourth dimension at the effects that we know are there, and we're beginning to peer into that. So what we're doing is we're seeing little pinpricks now that are popping in just a little bit into that next level of understanding. As humanity's consciousness begins to continues to raise, as the vibratory rate of consciousness increases, then we come into the type of intelligence and understanding that allows us to punch bigger holes, to see more into those kind of things. So I think right now we're in an intriguing era to where a lot of things are being implied. They're not totally proven yet. There's implication. There are implied understandings of things that give us ahas and give us an excitement. And they give us that makes it fun for us, right? So we start beginning to see little possibilities of things that we've kind of felt intuitively inside, but we're not there yet. And so it's getting close, and that's where my passion and my work gets into. Not so much. I love the science part. I think people listening can hear that in my voice. But where it gets more exciting to me is like, let's take our next steps as human beings.
Right.
Let's clean up the things in Howard Martin that needs to be cleaned up. The next levels in my own growth. The next places where I move beyond my own vanities. Where I move beyond my own insecurities. where I move beyond the comparisons and things that are there subtly in me that still hold me back. And as I continue to work on those kind of things and refine those things, it draws in that next level of intelligence. So where I focus a lot of my attention is on what people can do. Because through their doing this, through the own personal empowerment that they gain, that's when they're going to get their own insights and their own fulfillment in this. And that's where I think we all make our best contribution energetically to one another, to build a field that allows for some of these brilliant scientists and people who have dedicated their life to this type of research to be able to more easily access the field of information they need to punch those bigger holes from one dimension to the other.
Well, you know, I love what you're saying at the very end of the conversation. You know, what's a field? And a field is basically when you look at even things from a scientific point of view, it's one thing against the other. It's about the relationships and about the communication that's going on and where things are like to bond. And it reminds me, aren't humans also solar cells in a solar system? And we're all kind of still operating with our own sort of, like, a solar cell is an electrical device that converts energy of light directly into an electric photon, in a sense, what we're doing. But it still has to do with us having to live our life as that solar cell and being responsible for being, you know, like in our bodies, we have all these cells. It's a universe within a universe, and we're part of a cell within another universe. But it does come down to the end of the day all about you. Or do you fix it
yourself
right. First? Thank you very much.
So I respect a lot of different people for various things, and I respect the big thinkers, and I respect the spiritual leaders and things like that. I really do. And that's all part of an energetic contribution that they make. But I never wanted to lose the sight of some of the amazing things that go on in what appears to be ordinariness that have a huge impact on the energetic fields. What about the young mother with three children? She's single. Yeah. And she has to work two jobs to make that happen and take care of those kids. And she does it with a great attitude. And she puts out love and care for the people that she is in contact with. She may see herself as totally ordinary, as mundane, as the great ones of these other people. But where's greatness? I think greatness can be in that person who can pull that off, because that's a lot. If you think about it, I'm just using that as one example. But a young mother with three kids having to work two jobs who maintains a certain connection to her own heart, puts that love and care, and does it all with a good attitude, that's a powerful energetic radiator into that field. So some of those people become my heroes, as well as the respect that I have for the great thinkers and all those folks, too. I still see greatness in so many people in so many different ways.
Well, I like the idea of the ordinariness, because in essence, that's what we all do. We all get up, take a shower, put our underwear on in the morning, and then the rest of it is how we live our lives. And where I think you're dead on is with the heart. The heart is it for all of us. And you know, all ancient traditions go back to the wisdom of the heart. All of them. There is no exception.
Yeah, it's been said for thousands of years. I think what we did at HeartMath is we sort of brought it to the 21st century. And we put some modern language around it and some science to give it an empirical connection to the kind of thinking that we have today and where respect is today. And we seek empirical understanding of things today. So that's what we did at HeartMath. I mean, heart's been around forever, and we certainly don't have any ownership of that. We just helped to sort of reshape it so that people could believe in it more, because there's an intelligence there, heart intelligence, that really can give us the ability to come into some of these new understandings that are so exciting and so much fun. But we just got a little bit more to go, I think, in terms of ourselves. Like you said, we're getting close. But a little bit more work to do on ourselves that will pop us through to the next. And as we go to that next, it unfolds a whole new world of understanding and possibility. And that'll eventually filter down in the not-too-distant future either into how we function as a global society.
Yeah, there's you know, I do the magazine, and there's three issues that come to mind that we've done. One was the one on water, one was one on the electric universe, and one was one on all is light. And it takes you from the micro to the macro, but it also takes you from the science to the spiritual component of all of it. And one thing that comes to my mind as I looked at this, I think I sent this to you, is the structure and the dance of life itself. And when I think of, go back to the ancient Egyptians, which is the Merkaba body, which is the the tetrahedron that we sort of dance in. And when you look at that, that's in a structure that is the same thing as your DNA structure, and it's the same thing as how electrical currents actually get charged. So I think when we talk about matter and light, they understood it. And it's how bright can your light shine?
Yeah, there was an understanding, I think, the way I look at the ancients is they understood some things that we lost along the way that they already had an understanding of. But to me, where we are now is we can unfold things that they didn't know.
Like?
We can move beyond that. Well, the new understandings of things, just like the things you mentioned. I mean, they may have understood the tetrahedrons and the energetic connection to DNA, whatever, but we can understand it more. We can understand it better. Evolution has moved on. You know, it's at another place now. We are in the process, I believe, Karen, of making a dimensional shift from baseline consciousness, shifting from the third dimension, which has been around for a couple thousand years, all the way to the higher fourth. And I don't think that's ever happened before. I think it's the biggest shift in consciousness since there's been human beings on the planet. And we're in the middle of it. And the opportunity there is we can build upon with great respect what the ancients said, but we can take it to a new thing. We're becoming the ancients of the future, right?
Yeah, we are. Is that why I'm getting my wrinkles?
That's what we're becoming, yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. We're becoming the ancients of the future. So, but
I'm quitting out myself.
A new Howard Martin quote. I'm sure this will end up online somewhere.
Because you have a lot of people on your board at HeartMath who I totally respect. You have Jack Canfield, and you also have Greg Braden, who came with you that one time to Vancouver, and whose work I really love, but very supportive of your heart-based connection.
Yeah, Jack felt like the Global Coherence Initiative could be, he actually said it, and we put it on the site, he said that he felt it could be the greatest experiment in the history of the world. Because we'd be proving out that our thoughts, feelings, our emotions, all these things that we have are really influencing the Earth itself. You know,
right.
We are co-creating with
amazing.
The Earth through our thoughts and feelings. And if you think about it, why people have been praying for thousands of years. We all believe in that. When someone in our family is sick, we pray for them, right? So there's a natural, intuitive belief that we are doing something energetically that can help, right? Well, if we can put context around that and, you know, and give it more empirical understanding, all that does is increase the power of belief. And through that power of belief increase, the potency of our intention goes up, right?
Right.
So it's an interesting little game we're playing here, you know.
Well, it is kind of the game of life, for sure. I think one thing I got from Greg's work was the idea the more you charge, again, the more charge you bring to something, the more you believe it is so, then you can actually activate and bring it true to your life. So I think that still goes back to what you're doing with the global coherence, because prayer is again, giving voice. I like it when the guy from Cymatics, John Stuart Reed, said, the Tibetans will go out collectively, but they don't keep it to themselves. They actually say it out loud.
Uh-huh.
You ever heard that? I just thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I have. There's different forms of prayer, different methods that seem to work, but you know, you put it out there a bit more through that particular style. Some people just do it in a very deep inner place as well. I don't know which is more effective. As long as people do it, I think that's what's most important. Because I think that we have so much more that we can influence through the power of our own belief and intentions than we realize. My belief is that we do that best when we're in contact with the heart, with the core of our authentic self. That when we come into that coherent state that we can measure through things like our M-Wave technology and Inner Balance Trainer, we can see those changes happening in real time. And when we're in that coherent state, that's when we have that ability to make influential changes through just the power of our belief and the power of our thoughts and feelings that are far larger than what we've learned to realize. And that would be an example of new that we're coming into, is that we don't even realize the potency and power of our co-creative potential.
Well, here's the other question.
Get on to it, but there's more to go.
Oh, I think we realize that it's a resonant field, and I think you're very familiar with Dr. Joe's work. Dispenza.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I am. I've worked with him on a number of occasions. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've hosted Joe and done many of his workshops on the power of our own thinking and thoughts. I mean, he's very potent. He's going to be a guest in October on the show. I love his work.
Right.
I think. Yeah. I just love the idea of how we, with our thoughts, resonate out, attract like particles, and how we can change through our thoughts. He's had people heal themselves and have miraculous things happen in his workshops. So I'm fully supportive of Dr. Joe of that.
Yeah, he did it to himself. I mean, I was on just a fun story.
Yeah,
I was on a panel. you know, I talk about emotions and I talk about the need to self-regulate and all that kind of thing. That's interesting to people, but then when people start talking about healing, you know.
Oh yeah, he literally got hit by a truck.
I know. I did first time I ever worked with him was at an event in Florida. There were the two of us were paired together, and the beginning of the event was that he and I went up on stage and we introduced ourselves and we told our personal story, and then people could ask questions. And so I told a little bit of mine. I maybe took 5 minutes. He took about 30 and explained the whole thing about getting hit by a truck and healing himself. We got to think nobody wanted to talk to me. They all wanted to talk to him. You know?
It was the power of his intention and his mind.
Yeah, we've become good friends. And so, yeah, you're right. We have the ability to do so much more, Karen. And I think that's if I want to leave something with the listeners today, is that everybody has a heart. Everybody has the intelligence of the heart. As they unlock that intelligence, the new understandings of so many of these wonderful, expansive concepts that are available to us today become more real and more tangible. And that we, in fact, are really, you know, controlling the timing in many ways on how quickly these things unfold. And that,
well, I think you're
to me, the
really
prime responsibility is that we have a responsibility to bring this world to a new place and to do it in a most kind and gentle way as it can be done, while acknowledging that big changes have to occur and they're not all going to be easy. But we can make it a kind and gentle process.
You have one more thing I want to make sure I add in before you. I know you have to go in 4 minutes, but here's
sure.
the question. You're also looking for funding, I think, you're to do research on the sun. Is this true?
Well, we're doing funding now on the Adopt a Scientist campaign, which is
okay.
a campaign to have a dedicated scientist that specializes in astrophysics and data processing. That's just for the salary of the scientist. And we could put up more sensor sites, but it's the purpose can't be fully realized until we have that next level of scientific expertise. Our scientists are brilliant, but they need another scientist specializing in just that. So the salary is $100,000 a year to have someone minimally do what we want to do. We've raised about half of that so far. It's being done through donations through the Global Coherence Initiative. Now, there's another thing I will mention that works in consort with that is last year we did something really cool. We went to Mexico, to the Maya Riviera, to a 5-star resort with a beautiful wellness center attached to it in the jungle right next to the beach. And we did the first Global Coherence Heart Math International event. We brought people from 9 or 10 different countries around the world. Myself and Roland McCready facilitated the training at that event. We built it so there was training in the morning, free time in the afternoon to enjoy everything that was there. And at night we came back together and we did heart-focused energetic work as a group. And we're going to do that again this year. It was a great success last year. It was a very uplifting event as well as relaxing and entertaining. We're going to do it again this year, and every penny that we get from that goes into the Global Coherence Initiative. And that funds things like the scientists and the other things that we need to begin to do our part to unfold these new understandings. So if you go to the glcoherence.org website, that's glcoherence, coherence.org, you can learn more about Adopt a Scientist. You can click on a link right there that says there's a thing on the front about the event we're doing in Mexico. All that stuff's right there. And you can read about that and become a member. If you can't do any of that, then please just become a member and work with us and other people who are working together to use the power of energetic intention to make a positive contribution to the world. But we'll be in October in Mexico in the Riviera Maya right next to Tulum. It's great. And then all that money goes to helping on the Adopt a Scientist campaign. We use that money to fund research that goes into understanding the energetic relationship between us and the Earth as a living system. And that's part of what we do here at HeartMath. It's actually one of the most exciting and fun parts of what I do here is to be a part of Global Coherence Initiative.
Howard, you are doing great work. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for what you do and what you will continue to do. And keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Karen, and you too. Thanks for what you do with the magazine and for having this show and for bringing information like this to people and for giving me an opportunity to do something I enjoy, which is to talk about my life's work and hopefully in a meaningful way that helps somebody with what they do.
Perfect. And thank you again. I'll send you a link to the show when we're done. Thank you, Howard.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, Howard. Hello, everybody. We're back, and we have Steve Elswick with us currently right now. And Steve is publisher of The Extraordinary Science and Technology. He also has published, his other things he's done is Exotic Research Report. He's got a Doubleheader Symposium coming up. In the next week, it's out in Albuquerque. The dates are July 24th, 28th. Steve, are you there?
I am here.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Oh, perfect.
Hello,
okay. Yep, I can totally hear you. And what Steve is here to tell us about, he's also, just so you know, in 1990, he's the International Tesla Society's Man of the Year. He is up on all the latest technology. He's got a ton of people coming to his symposium in Albuquerque in July, in about a week from now. So any of you spontaneous souls who want to get on the cutting edge of technology, is the man that's in the know. And the website is up on the link. He and I were talking the other day about what he topics of what was happening to the show. And key ring atom physics behind Robert's motor. So why don't you, Steve, give us a clue. Just some highlights of your show.
Okay, well, back in the 1950s, this guy by the name of Joseph Papp, he developed a new engine, which would run on noble gases like helium, xenon, and neon. And just one small charge of these gases, you know, like less than a liter, would run these engines for like about 6 months or more continuously. And when Papp passed away, that technology was kind of lost. And now there's these... The Rohner brothers, who worked with Papp, have actually been trying to replicate his work and build the piston version of the engines. And this gentleman, Donnell Roberts, who has developed this new physics, you know, it's called the key ring atom. It's a new atomic model based on looking at the atom like a key ring. You know, we have like one ring and we have all these rings looped into it. And it's all these extra loops that provide all this energy, you know, for like nuclear reactions and everything. And he took this atom and looked at the Papp engine and theorized that they were getting the energy from the cloud. He just developed a rotary version of the engine, which now is operational. In fact, they're working on phase two, which they're hoping to bring to the conference, which would be Barney. It has a 3-inch head on it, but they're now capable of actually having these plasma reactions like you have in the sun, where the thing comes out and then shrinks back down in a matter of nanoseconds. And that pulse they can get out of this is what runs the engine. You can liken this to as important as the Manhattan Project was to the atomic bomb. You know, this is basic physics at its best. They now have a bunch of demonstrations they're going to bring to the conference to actually show you, so you can see these explosions happening in like a tube. You know, they have like clear plastic tubes.
Yeah.
And they're able to shoot this thing in there. And you'll be able to see it operating. And by just watching things happen, that's how physics gets made. But we're just not in the energy. We're also in the medicine. And back at the turn of the last century, Nikola Tesla, and I'm sure your listener knows who he is, invented the Tesla coil. And from the Tesla coil, you came out with the violet ray machines and everything. And every doctor's office had to have a violet ray in the early 1900s, then all of a sudden in the 1930s, as the pharmaceutical companies came to be in and the MD teamed up with them, the AMA teamed up with the pharmaceutical companies, they pushed all the electromedicine out.
Was that like the Rife machine?
The Rife machine would be one of them, you know.
Okay.
And because Rife would not pay the AMA dues or buy their advertising in their magazine, they went and actually destroyed Rife. You know, they went after him as a fraud. Even though he was curing 300 people a day in his clinic in San Diego, instead of the doctors embracing it, okay, the AMA set out to destroy it. And I guess so.
Wow.
My whole organization, TeslaTech, and our magazine, Extraordinary Science and Technology, we're a freedom-based magazine. And our goal is to give people total freedom. And you can't have freedom as long as someone controls your source of energy for movement, like in transportation, or they control your health, you know, through the type of medicine you can pursue. And we've been working for all my life on promoting these two things, you know, health and medicine in my magazine. And at our conference, because
quite
so many,
extensive. Magazine is expensive.
It is quite expensive. Oh, it's $30 a year.
Okay.
You know, if you're a member.
Right. So
and
when you think about the thing of controlling and controlling energy with Tesla, it was funded by Morgan. Didn't Tesla have an idea for a car at that point, and that kind of got wiped off the boards? Because he had it with free energy.
Well, one of the things, the test I had, you know, he first developed like the current, and that was only supposed to be a stopgap until he could get his wireless power. And the wireless power would have been, was unveiled in Colorado Springs. We did extensive testing there to the point where he was able to light lamps about 30 miles away from Colorado Springs. His machine was so powerful, it was, and it still is, the most powerful machine in the world as far as electricity goes. Like, although the Stanford accelerators make it these huge voltages and everything, Tesla has both voltage and the current to match it, which makes power, and it still comes out to be the most powerful when you look at it from an engineering viewpoint. But then, later on in his life, you know, he built Wharncliffe, and that's where he lost all of his fortune, you know, was trying to bring wireless power to the world, and J.P. Morgan cut him off because they realized that although Tesla was able to bring the power from Niagara Falls to them for him and they could make a profit on him, if they were to destroy that wirelessly, they wouldn't be able to meter it. And so they set out to destroy Tesla, you know. And Tesla,
well, that even another
advice, says,
yeah?
Pardon?
No, I was thinking you have this guy named Gary Peterson, Tesla's wireless energy system. That was one of the things you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, Gary will be demonstrating Tesla's system on a very small scale, to show that it can be done. Tesla's, his plan was to deliver power to the world, but later on in life he realized that he didn't need to put the energy there. It's already there, and it permeates this planet, you know, actually the universe. And that's when he built his car in the 1930s, which is a matter of controversy because although there's a reference in a New York newspaper about his test run, all of a sudden all references to it disappears, and the test moves it to the most expensive hotel in the world, the most modern one, the Hotel New Yorker, which was brand new at the time. And it was so new, it had its own hospital, it had all of its own shops, it had barbershops, it had six restaurants, you know. You could live your entire life in this building, you never had to leave it. And Tesla had two apartments up on the upper floors there, one to work in and one to live in. And it was all paid by Westinghouse. So we can only surmise that Tesla demonstrated the car. There have been underground accounts of that. In fact, I have a book out on that called Tesla's Car. And that account shows him, like, he takes a six-foot antenna and he inserts it and then pushes in some rods, and then all of a sudden he can drive around in this car, you know, not using anything, you know. No batteries, no gas engine or anything, or just electric motor. So once you see that happening, you can only wonder, you know, what could have been.
Or yet what's to be.
And, or what's to be, you know, if we're allowed to have it. And that's how come my conference is really important, because these guys can come to my conference and they can, we have like all these medical devices, you know, like the violet rays, some of the more modern stuff, different therapies there that people can come in, check out, talk to the our vendors there, actually use some of this stuff and see what works for them. As far as the energy stuff, we have a lot of energy stuff there. We have people who have converted their cars over. It looks like we're going to have a Tesla car there even, you know, which is one of the most modern electrics, you know. And a lot of investor types, Wall Street even, is looking at Tesla Motors as being the next GM or Ford, you know, at the rate they're moving forward. So it's pretty exciting, you know.
It sounds like it. Well, I know there's one thing that I know when I go to a conference, and I've been to the pyramid, the Marriott Pyramid in Albuquerque. It's a really intimate setting, and that's what I really liked about it. When I went to the Electric Universe conference this last year, it was a space where you could – you're away enough from everything that everybody kind of sits in the lounge and talks, from the inventors to the speakers to the audience, and it's a very intimate for me. That's the best part about actually going to a conference, the intimacy of it, and your setting that you've picked is perfect for that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you never got to go outside. You know what we do at our conference? Every night we have like a big social event, you know, and we have like hors d'oeuvres and everything, and a cash bar outside underneath the pavilion there.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys stay up all night, you know, and it's really a nice place. Albuquerque, the hottest it ever gets, you know, well, average temperature used to be 90 degrees, and I presume it's going to be okay again this year. Although one has to wonder with all the climate change we're seeing. But it's a great time to sit down and talk to these guys. And there's a lot of cross-fertilization going on. You know, and people sit there and they compare their inventions with other people's inventions, you know. And, you know, you just don't get to sit around and have a beer with someone famous, you know, every day. I mean, you know.
No, absolutely.
So it's a great setting.
You have it. There's one thing that you wanted to talk about, which is actually I have a gentleman coming on in about two more shows, and it's about scalar energy and healing. Can you explain a little bit about that? Because that's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, my interest with scalar energy started off on the energy side. There's a thing called zero-point energy. And kind of like when you study classical electromagnetics, you have these two forces, okay, two opposing forces, and they meet in the middle, and they cancel each other out. So the question is where does that energy go to? And we believe they call it zero-point energy or scalar energy, and it kind of like goes into this another dimension, so to speak, you know, and you can't really measure it through conventional means, because, like, everything is being canceled out. But the energy is still there. Now, that energy also turns out to have some benefits. And it appears to, like, they could generate these fields, or maybe perhaps even pre-existing. Like, you know, a magnet has his own little field. Well, scalar does, too. And, like, you can have these devices, okay, and you can put them on people, and they will feel the difference, okay? And you can't measure it with like a voltmeter or an ammeter, but yet if you take and do like a Korean photography, okay, and they do have devices where they can do full body scans now, it will change their electrical field that the body emits, okay? So we know that it's doing something. It's just that, how is it doing?
You know, it was interesting, Steve. I'm doing the next issue, and it relates to healing and DNA. And what came up after doing the last issue on the magazine with numbers is if you look at a, you know, sphere, Taurus, top is positive and negative. But what was interesting, there was a guy named Lloyd Meir who did energy healing and did it with his dowsing. But he said, what I do is, you know, there's number sets. And I guess it was when I actually met with you with Marco Roden. But there's numbers that are electrical. So in within that little sphere, there's positive on the top and negative on the bottom, and they equate with numbers. And so if you, let's say, you're overweight, and you have this frequency exactly in the positive range, but polar opposite, and this mirror basically said, I just reversed numbers, and you say those numbers X amount of times, and it begins to heal your body's frequency in numbers. And when I was talking to this other gentleman who had scalar energy, he says, well, that's exactly what we're doing with the scalar energy. We're basically changing the polarities, and the middle point is the bin point. Does that make sense? I just thought it was fascinating.
Well, to some degree, you know, but then I get around to how do you prove it, you know? And that's what my conference is all about, is proving it, you know? And a lot of the stuff that at first, you know, comes off sound like, you know, what my friends call woo-woo stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's hard to prove, okay? And so at my conference, you know, people come in there, they get to talk to each other, you get all these minds working together, you know, and then you can come up with some experiments that would prove or disprove some of these theories, you know. And because that's very important, because until you understand what's really going on and you can measure it, you know, some way, until you could do that.
Steve, I was looking at the other day, and it was looking at magnetic fields and their polarities, and it did it, and it showed it sensitive thing on a color spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at that based on Marco Roden's work. And you put the 6, the 9, and the 3, which the 9 is in the middle, and the 3, and it matched it and fared perfectly. So it has been measured. We just don't put all these sciences together and then sort of like show that they actually do work. We have process of bliss, is what it like to me. I looked at that and almost fell off my chair. So
yeah, well,
I was
that's good, you know, but one time is a anomaly, two times is a phenomenon. And three times, you know, then you start to be able to start engineering it. And until until you can really measure it and get a handle on it, you can't engineer stuff. But once you start engineering, then you can really start making some headway and really improving. It's just like the motor with the key ring atom. Until they were able to come up with the physics behind it and that, these guys are shooting in the dark. And I know for like about 20 years, you know, they haven't really been able to move it forward. All the advances in the rotary motor or the PEP engine, I believe, has been made in the last 6 months using the key ring atom physics, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, and like, but our conference, you know, we just have the energy stuff, we have the medical stuff. I can't emphasize, you know, how important it is for people who go to conferences. I mean, you can get a lot of information on the internet, but how much of that is real? How much is someone just talking and making up a story, you know? You don't know that. You go to a conference, you look someone in the eye, you shake their hand, you get a feel for them, and you can see their stuff work. It's a big difference.
Well, it sounds like you also have demos going on like crazy. I mean, the list of things that you have at your conference are amazing.
Our motto is hardware, not hot air. You know?
I like that.
We have enough global warming going on. We don't need to add to it. You know. We plan on a lot of work on models. I think.
Yeah, your Tesla wave biofield, etheric energy. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I'll see if it could gather to me.
I didn't catch that last.
You have all of these different speakers. One of them speaking is on Tesla waves, biofields, and etheric energy.
Okay, that gets back to the scalar waves again.
Yeah.
Tesla waves and scalar waves are sometimes interchangeable here. And Tesla breathes in the ether, and that all the energy came out of the ether. But when Einstein comes around, they threw the ether and says, oh, that don't exist. It's a total vacuum. And That's not true. You know, and now the ether is coming back in. The scalar waves, you know, we're going to ultimately figure a better way of measuring than through biofields. And we'll be able to demonstrate some of this. And I believe Lucien, who's the speaker, he's going to be bringing some demonstrations there as well. And he'll be having the audience come up and as part of the experiments in that.
You
I
also
think
have another...
anyone who comes... Pardon?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Anyone who comes to the conference is going to have a great time. You know.
Well, you also have this other
and
guy.
We,
you have Clayton Nolte, who does the magic of structured water. Can you tell us a little bit about the structured water?
Yeah, the structured water, you know, like when the water you just scale your tap on that, it's pretty bad. It's pretty much dead water. It's been chlorinated. It's all the energy has been taken out of it and everything. And by putting water through vortexes and sometimes through magnetic fields, you can reintroduce the energy that water should naturally have, like the water in a forest as it comes down through the stream. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's tumbling and everything and going through all these vortexes and picking up energy as it's doing that. And at the same time, it's bringing life to the trees, you know, and the trees in turn protect the water, you know. And that brings up an interesting thing. A lot of this, pardon?
Here's a question, Steve. When I was talking to Howard Martin before, he was talking about how there were three vials and somebody's field influencing waters. So what you're basically saying is, explain how is influenced by these different fields, and how one field will affect the other field, because that's actually what we were talking about, how fields affect fields, and you're basically saying water dynamics have a lot to do with that.
Well, it's just not fields, though, you know, because I can't have a magnetic field. It's like, you know, when you, like, bring two magnets together and they're opposite and they're the same polarity, that push apart from each other, okay? So there's a field effect in a field, okay? But you also have a physical motion going on here. Like when that water is coming in there and it's spinning, you know, it's tumbling, all energy moves in a vortex, you know. And if you don't believe me, just think about it. A tornado is a small vortex. A hurricane
right.
is a huge vortex. It's how the Earth moves its energy around, you know. If you ever, even electricity, like we made these vacuum plasma jars in our museum, and you touch the jar, and you see the electric, the flow of electricity come to your finger, but it comes in the form of a vortex, you know, and you see these little vortexes follow your fingers as you move your hand down, you know.
Ooh.
So all energy flows in a vortex, you know. And
right.
That's why emotion itself is important. And every invention that Tesla had, there's a specific geometry to it. And a lot of these Tesla coil builders and that, if they ignore the geometry, they don't have a really powerful coil. So geometry, which affects the way things move, will affect, you know, life itself, you know.
So the geometry
no
is
accident,
sort of an out,
you know?
Right? Well, the geometry is the frequency, the stuff that you see in these
no, the
pictures, right?
No, the geometry is the shape of things, you know, like, you know,
right?
Spheres, you know, triangles, and that. And when you're starting to get into numerologies, then you're starting to look at angles, and then you start more or less like trying to get into frequencies and that, you know.
That goes into the Roden coil, right?
It will go into the Roden coil, yeah. And Mark, by the way, will be at the conference.
Oh, he will be there?
Mark will, yes, and he'll
be
bringing he'll be bringing a special coil, which can light up a bunch of lights now, a panel of lights. And so we'll be having demonstrations there, you know, on how this all the stuff is working out. Pretty excited, you know. Like I say, we have a lot of hardware. So.
Well, we featured Marco in the last issue of The Construct of the Universe because he has something called the Mod 9, and Mod 9 shows how the universe is constructed via a torus field, and he shows how through the field all these numbers relate. So he believes in numerology, and he's quite a spiritual man, and faith at the Baha'i, I think he had a question, and it sort of came to him in the middle of the night. Is that how that happened, Steve? I think that that's what I understand from Marco.
Well, that's what Marco says, and I can't speak on as to how people get their ideas, you know, because I get my ideas, you know, like in my sleep, you know. Sometimes
yeah.
I sleep on a problem, and the next day I wake up and I have the answer. I mean, how'd I get it? You know.
I think it's that zero still point where your brain and everything else in the static of the day has been zeroed out, and you're still enough in that moment to receive.
Well, one of the great things about my conference is we're really hardware-based, you know, and we're really hard science-based. But even so, we're like a bridge from the hardcore mainstream scientist who can't see past the end of his nose to we're getting into more etheric realms and moving more towards the quantum energy where things are getting more like in the woo-woo, but we're getting the tools to actually measure them. You know. And that's where,
the woo-woo. I think all that woo-woo has been right for a long time. I think what you're saying is right. We're just being able, for the first time, to measure all these amazing, I'm going to say it, that's why I call it science to sage, because it really is a fusion between, I think God is the greatest scientist. So I think what we're discovering is magic and the miracle of how our universe is actually created and unfolds. That was my question. How does God create this designer universe? And I think with your conference and things like this, this is how we discover the world. Everybody's got their own little microscope on, looking at it through a particular lens, but each of them synthesizes, I think, a profound and a wonderful lab for us to explore. And you look like you have the ultimate conference of goodies and toys. I mean, your list of speakers and stuff is like, it's not like one or two or five or six. How many do you have? 25? I don't know.
Approximately 25. We have about 25,
yeah.
and that doesn't even cover the people in the wings there, you know, who aren't on the main stage, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's going to be a great conference, you know. And we ended up, the whole conference, we tied it all together at the end with Mr. Boudreaux. He's a chemist, you know, a PhD in chemistry. And his talk would be God Creates the Earth, the Genesis of Creation Chemistry.
Yeah,
so,
that was pretty fun.
It
are you recording
funny,
this
you know,
by any? Are you going to record this for sale later on?
Yeah, we'll have the whole conference will be on DVDs, and you'll be able to get them from
okay.
our website, TeslaTech.info.
Yeah. Yep.
That's
and the people and people can actually. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
That's TeslaTech.info. INFO.
And it's not too late. People can actually. Yeah, but it's not too late. People can even sign up at the door, have I heard right? Right?
They can sign up at the door, and they can pre-register still. In fact, if they call in and tell them you heard it on the radio, we'll give you a 20% discount. Tell them Steve said it, and they'll give it to you if you call in the next 24 hours. You know?
Okay.
So tomorrow at 6 p.m., the special ends. You know?
Got it.
And,
wow, thank you. Thank you. And with that, we're going to conclude the show. And thank you so much, Steve. Good luck on your conference. It sounds like just a lot of fun. I wish I could go. And with that, we'll end the show. Everybody, thank you for listening in. And there you go. If you're listening
correct.
At another time, you can always buy the DVD or of the show, of not of the show, of your show. There we go.
Can I give the phone number?
Yeah, quick.
520-463-1994.
That's
520-463-1994.
There we go.
Tell them
Steve
sent you.
You got it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.